This is Poetry on the Move, Summer Readings. In this episode, Philip Hall. Philip Hall worked for many years as a teacher of outdoor education and sport throughout regional New South Wales, North Queensland, and the Northern Territory. He now resides in Melbourne's Sunshine, where he works full-time as a writer. He also works as an editor with Verity Lahr's Emerging Indigenous Writers Project and as a poetry reader at Overland. In 2015, he published Duwaruwaru, a book of his collaborations with the Borroloola Poetry Club. A new collection of place-based poetry, Fume, is to be published by UWAP. The project celebrates Indigenous culture in the Northern Territory's Gulf of Carpentaria. Philip Hall is reading here at the Poetry on the Move Festival, recorded in September 2017.
I didn't actually go to Borroloola to write poetry. I went there to run sport programs and camp programs to re-engage kids with school. So I didn't go there to be a poet, but I ended up writing quite a bit of poetry while I was there, and this is some of it. And a couple of years ago, I actually had a pretty small breakdown. The first poem that I might read is a little poem called Brolga Clan. It's a poem almost at the beginning of my time in Borroloola, and it's about my orientation to what was going on. This is a little poem called Brolga Clan. The Macassans, I better explain this, otherwise it may not be made sense. Christian churches were not the first religious buildings built in Australia. For hundreds and hundreds of years, and of course I'm not even going to first Australian culture, which was also, of course, deeply spiritual. But in northern Australia, the Macassans, Indonesians, had been trading for hundreds of years, at least 400 or 500 years, probably longer. And the Macassans used to come and trade with northern Australia and would live there for 4, 5, sometimes 6 months of the year while they were collecting what they were coming here to collect and to trade and all those sorts of things. And it's unfathomable that Muslim people would have come to Australia and been trading year in, year out, living here for all that time and not built mosques. And this is hundreds of years before white fellows came here and started to build churches. So this poem mentions the Macassans. The Borroloola ladies, the old ladies, which we respectfully refer to as Badi Badi, they used to tell beautiful stories of these brown-skinned people coming to shore. And of course, they used to sing these lovely romantic reminiscences of seeing these brown-skinned people come to shore for trade. It's wonderful. Brolga Clan. From the town camps, junk is spoiling like a sniffed fume squall. And a clan of Brolga are trumpeting their distaste, regally bowing and high-stepping their preen meddlesome chests and arching their wings upwards in a whoosh of grey ochred lore. From around the bend, a four-wheeler spins like a shanghaied wedgie, collapsing to maggots on the ground. The beloved Macassans, hoary old tamarind trees, the emerald exotic glass and steel, tools paving the trepang and shell starlit highway, colonially rutted by uniformed rifle-collared lines. Behind us, the old police station, a poor museum to frontier orders, cathedral mounds rising out of spear grasses, ironwoods brandishing clumps of mistletoe and their tiny pastel chewing gum fruits, barbed wire fencing, a rodeo's rusty dust bowl, the prick-hard football ground. And from those sidelines I was stamped to cheer barefoot cyclones, like a satellite stepping stars. The kids in Borroloola, their favourite footballer was, of course, Cyril Rioli, who was also an NT boy. And The kids used to love telling you stories. Everything in the end revolved around somebody stepping something like Cyril Rioli. Unfortunately, Cyril doesn't get into any of my poems, but football does. Like a lot of remote Indigenous communities, there's a mine on country. The mine produces every year a wonderful glossy brochure about all the wonderful things it does, all the wonderful things it provides for people to compensate for lost access to country and all sorts of wonderful things. What they don't say in the brochure, of course, is that most of the money is never spent because it has such stringent requirements attached to it that nobody can ever meet those requirements, therefore no one ever gets the money. My job was to run sport programs and camp programs, and I was deeply reliant on the mine and getting money from the mine. And they produced a wonderful glossy brochure telling people all the sport and camp programs that they funded. Sounded fantastic. But to get on my camps, the kids had to go to 85% school attendance and have no school suspensions. My job was to be a re-engagement officer. I thought I was working with the kids who didn't meet those requirements. Anyway, welcome to MacArthur River Mine, which was on the news only about a week ago. It hasn't paid royalties to the NT government for the last 2 years. The savannah is open for business with trinkets as a ruptured dreaming site leaches metals, acid and salt. This is business, hand-shaken, cheeky and fast. So amidst the broken Coojiga and fragments of law, you sing our presence still to this river bend, where the Abner Range gives gold ochre for ceremony, streamy with blood, and where quartzite outcrops guard this riverbed's cleavage to a rainbow's animated, pent-up clout. So it is to this hydro majestic you lead, to this sweep of skeletal river gums, sandalwood and weeping paper barks, whose leaves are a sweet steamed balm. And while kids hunt in mud for water lily bulbs, turtles and mussels, you take a coolerman of soaking sliced yam to grime and make into tea tree wrapped cakes. This good hot tucker, this pick millard mob, right up to sing this inside out story. Next morning in drizzle, we drive past the mine's locked boom gates and hulk of combustible waste. Pyrite, iron sulfide, stacked in a reactive rising dump and releasing plumes of toxic burn. And concealed from the road is the river's sacred rainbow serpent, gouged in high-grade zinc and leaking a river's bioaccumulation of mercury and lead, a flowing, numinous landscape now watched over by broken, poison song. And this is royalty. And it's for my Gudangi family from Borroloola. I drove out bush with family again to Jaipa, a catfish hole lined with paper bark and river gum, and those gleaming quartzite outcrops like a silver and zinc pleath encompassing dark sheet water. We hopped, stinging across the baked earth, a tessellated black soil with small sand drifts gathering to the decaying stone-boiled edges. And while Nana fired a billy, weaving pandanus frond sieves, we all crashed, energized in the brown water's warm wash. In the late afternoon, cool relief, as Pop arrived to dig a bush turkey ground oven, we all set to work. The boys took a cast net and hand lines for barra, while the girls hunted in water, feeling in the mud for water lily bulbs, onions and yams. Later, they tap danced the mud, sweetening our outlook, a seismic detection service, reading for hibernating turtles, a shelled familial finery. At nightfall, our guts tight with their fill, We fired the billy and traced stars as pop smoked us in Kwandong, picking us up. And Nana sang country, rousing the scrub, and a rainbow's payback on this mine's seepage and another's foreshadowed hole in our burial grounds, mucking us up, making us sick. The generosity that I experienced while I was working up in Borroloola was just exceptional. As an old white fella moving to a place like that and working with people, the generosity that of sharing stories with you and of taking you out bush and sharing moments of bush tucker and bush medicine. And Borroloola has a very sad history going right back to the 1850s, even though it seems so remote and out of the way, you would think people would have been spared a lot of the earliest consequences of colonialism. But Borroloola, because it's on the base of the Gulf of Carpentaria, was a thoroughfare for the cattle industry from the 1850s, 1860s. And massacre and dispossession was happening from the 1860s onwards. By 1900, in the Gulf of Carpentaria, there had originally been at least 12 language groups. By 1900, only four remained. Everyone else had already been massacred. This is another poem that the Badi Badi of Borroloola asked me to write, and it grew out of a unit of work that we worked on and did together with the kids in the high school department at Borroloola. Badi Badi, I don't know whether I said, is the Yunya word for respectfully referring to older women. The Badi Badi call time on Mununga slogans of stop the boats, shaping up and giggling their macassan memories of brown bodies coming ashore in a spray of surging sea. For centuries, these boat people cultivated tamarind trees in a highlight of northern fruits spoilt in another latecomer's scorched earth. So with the Badi Badi, we integrated secondary programs, mapping macassan heritage sites and Australian detention centres, writing petitions and emails, researching and tabulating the figures on massacres and stolen land, resistance, Eddie Mabo, and land rights now. We camped at Jauruma and Luka, where once the conch shell heralded Yunyua welcome to traders hauling a well-learned, reverential eye. We hunted trepang, shark fin, sandalwood and shells of turtle and pearl, mounting a classroom exhibition, our pot of rainbow trade. And at Warralunku Arts, the Badi Badi collected an exhibition on all the Gulf's boat peoples, all those sweet fruits and lyre fruits carried by people from far away. So at year end, we huddled into troopies and through an avenue of tamarinds headed for Massacre Hill. Here an idyllic creek flat nestled an ancient fishing weir at the foot of a spur's sweeping runway up to the thrumming silence. That bluff of pelted fruit. Here the vertical stratifications of bedrock cut through, cheeky and rough. I think I'll be forever grateful and thankful to the generosity I experienced up in the Gulf of Carpentaria.
That was Philip Hall. This has been Poetry on the Move Summer Readings. Poetry on the Move is supported by IPSI, the International Poetry Studies Institute, at the Centre for Creative and Cultural Research at the University of Canberra. Thank you for listening.